Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from Tech Freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartzschrauber, your host. On today's show, set-top boxes or cable boxes, the FCC looks to open up the market for set-top boxes. Joining me to discuss this is Mariah Mensah, a recent graduate of Howard University School of Law. Mariah, thanks for joining the show again.
Hi, happy to be here.
So most Americans have more than one way of getting television, whether it's through a satellite company like DirecTV or Dish, or a cable company like Comcast or fiber company like Verizon Fios. And while they have multiple choices in how they get video, generally they have to get that video through a set-top box. You might refer to it as a cable box if you get it through a cable company, and you've got to rent that. And that's generally about $15 to $20 a month. And, you know, it can be expensive, they can be clunky, and they can be annoying, but, you know, that's how you get your video. And the FCC is looking to disrupt this market by requiring that companies like Dish and AT&T alter their equipment to allow third parties, companies maybe like Amazon or Google, to create set-top boxes that you could then use with your AT&T or Dish service. Sounds good in theory, more choices for consumers, right? But will it actually help consumers? And is this move only prolonging the inevitable death of the cable box? So, Mariah, why is the FCC doing, like, what do you think the purpose here of this order is?
So I think the purpose here is partially because the FCC is operating under the impression that they have a congressional mandate to do something to open up the set-top box market, as in something to provide greater competition in the market where there's currently not seen any competition at, from the FCC's perspective. There's no competition in set-top boxes when you have to get your set-top box from your MVPD, which is the provider like Comcast or AT&T or something like that. Sort of a point of clarification, they're not, the FCC NPRM is not specifically geared towards requiring more hardware. If anything, they're trying to sort of diminish the need for hardware, but it is going to require that the cable companies provide their feeds, basically their information, their content feeds, to third-party intermediaries that will then create user interfaces that will be the market opening to the FCC.
So what do you think of this proposal? I mean, first, do you think there's really a problem that needs to be solved? So the FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, he considers it a major problem that consumers have to rent a cable box for $15 to $20 a month. However, there are other options. I mean, there are people who are cutting the cord. They're moving to Netflix and Hulu. They're getting the TV through Chromecast, through Amazon Fire Sticks, through Apple TV. And those are certainly competitors to a cable box, especially if a consumer decides to get rid of cable because of those options. So, you know, someone could look at this market and see that it's very competitive, especially if you have multiple providers. Like I said, you can either get it through satellite, a phone company, a cable company, or you can just do none of those and get your internet get your video over the internet. The term they use is over the top. So, yeah, back to my question, do you think there's a problem and is this the right solution?
So I think the idea that cable companies are extracting $19.5 billion from consumers every year for a mandatory lease of a box, I could see that as a problem. However, this NPRM doesn't really address the things that are happening in the industry that are making that problem sort of fade into obsolescence. And you've just named a good long list of things, of innovations that have happened in the industry that have significantly improved the ability to not need a cable box. So if the FCC is seeing the cable box as the problem, or if they're seeing the lack of market diversity as a symptomatic of the existence of the cable box, then I think that that's failing to look at the bigger picture. And the bigger reality is we do have competing services that people watch on their home television.
Yeah. I mean, clearly you look at the market and consumers have never had more ways to consume video. I mean, people are constantly talking about how we're in a golden age of television, and that's largely because of non-traditional ways of getting video, like Netflix creating its own content, Amazon creating its own content, Hulu, even companies like Yahoo. So it really requires a certain perspective to look at this market and not see competition. But Chairman Wheeler, in an op-ed for Recode, he cited some consumer harms that he thinks this this proposal will fix. And I mean, talk about first world problems. One of the harms that he's citing is having to have multiple remotes multiple devices. Yeah. Because if you have a cable box where you get cable, and then you also have a Chromecast where you get your Hulu and your Netflix, and man, I mean, having two different things to worry about, I mean, geez, wouldn't it be so much better if all of it was in the same place? So definitely got to mandate that. So
by that logic, if you were sorting through a stack of 1,000 pages, would it not be easier to sort that stack of 1,000 pages if they were all split up into stacks of 100 pages? Of course it would be easier. So why would you take your individual stacks of 100 pages and turn them into a giant massive pile of 1,000 pages, which is what this NPRM is looking to do, really?
Right, because if you have you have a cable box, which is, and the cable channels are designed in a certain way to try to make them accessible, to present the diversity of programming in a way that consumers can find easy to use. And yes, opening it up to a third party would mean potentially having a lot more channels. You could have content arranged in many ways. You could have YouTube channels next to your television channels, and it could just be a lot more for consumers to handle. Maybe they wouldn't even want this in the first place. But let's talk about some of the concerns that not just cable companies have about this, but broadcasters, particularly minority and independent broadcasters, who really their existence depends a lot on the cable bundle. When you pay for a cable bundle, you're not paying equally for every channel. You have things like ESPN that are very expensive, and then you have a lot of other things that maybe would not, if you could choose every channel individually, you wouldn't pick them. So some of those smaller minority-owned stations really depend on the current arrangements they have with cable companies, where they are placed in the cable box. Does the FCC's notice of proposed rulemaking, does that address the concerns of minority broadcasters? And if it does, do you think it adequately addresses those concerns?
So as it was very helpfully pointed out to me, there are two ways to look at diversity in programming. And I think the FCC has chosen to define diversity in a way that will allow the elimination, basically, of minority broadcasters, because they're claiming that the ability to access low production value / quality / low production required television, as in streaming YouTube over your third party provider service, that's supposed to account for the diversity that's going to be inhibited when these minority broadcasters, who I encourage everyone to go read footnote 51 in the NPRM, footnote 51, I'm telling you it's worth reading, because it really does sort of encapsulate the problems for minority broadcasters and the reality that their channel placement and their contracts are very important to them. And that's a large part of how they continue to create quality broadcasting, quality minority broadcasting. And the elimination of capitalized broadcasters from the minority programming would be hugely detrimental. And I don't think there's really any way around that.
Yeah, it really does depend on your definition. I mean, if you are looking at minority programming like broadcasters and channels that really rely on contracts they've negotiated with companies like Comcast. So I'm a small TV channel. I've negotiated with Comcast to have my channel placed in a certain way in the lineup and to have my advertising done in a certain way, to have a certain number of commercials. All of this has been negotiated with Comcast, and theoretically the minority-owned station has negotiated this in a way that they think they can succeed, right? That this is an arrangement that will help them. Now, a third party, cable box comes into play, and now they're presenting the programming in whatever way they choose, because they're not bound by the contract that the broadcaster signed with Comcast. They can now have your minority-owned station next to 15 YouTube channels, or they could be directing you away from that channel to other things like apps online. So they're really concerned that this opening up of the market, while it sounds good in theory, would really just trample on all the work they've done to negotiate contracts with cable companies that they feel benefit them.
Yes, and in terms of what the NPRM really seeks to do, there's nothing that would require individuals to purchase another box. That, I don't think, is the ultimate goal, but the creating third party, the creation of a market for third-party user interfaces has the potential to, while it will allow a lot of people to create a thing that doesn't currently exist, that's great, but it has the potential to sort of like dilute the ability of a minority broadcaster to control how their content is being produced. And given that minority broadcasting is not, it's a relatively new thing that's that's being done on a broad scale. So to sort of trample that now would be really very detrimental, I think.
And there are other concerns. Cable companies having their service classified under a certain section of law, they are bound by certain privacy rules. So they cannot take your viewing habits necessarily and do that much with that information. Whereas a third-party provider, maybe it's Amazon, maybe it's someone else, maybe it's Yahoo, they really want to be able to look at the way you watch television, compare that with the way you search for things online, and glean something from you about that. And I'm not suggesting that there's something wrong with that necessarily, but the problem is cable companies, satellite companies like Dish and AT&T, they're bound by a different set of privacy rules. They wouldn't be able to do something like that. So a lot of these companies are concerned that this order is giving a competitive advantage to other people who want to be who advertise. These companies, Verizon bought AOL, they're interested in advertising too, but by forcing them to open up their set-top box market to companies that will be under different privacy regulations, they're very concerned that the inconsistent privacy regulations are going to give their competitors a competitive advantage granted by government. So, Mariah, is this addressed anywhere in the NPRM? Are there discussions about, you know, looking at the problem of picking winners and losers in the marketplace?
So I was fortunate to meet with someone at the FCC, and I was given the impression that content will be reproduced as is. So there are two potential ways to allow third parties access to the content that cable providers are providing to their constituents. So when that happens, I was given the impression that the content will not be modifiable, as in they won't be able to extract and insert their own commercials. Third-party intermediaries won't be able to do this. This was the impression that I was given. But nowhere, and I want to be very clear, nowhere in the NPRM is that explicitly made certain. So I could see why, as a cable provider, you would want at least some reassurance or something written somewhere that says these third-party intermediaries, which, by the way, do not as yet exist. The FCC thinks they're going to create a market here. So these third-party intermediaries should not, it was my understanding that they should not be able to strip commercials and add their own commercial content. But I think that only further constricts the proposed market.
Yeah, I mean, the FCC is, they can tell you that, but they haven't indicated in the actual formal document that they're going to do that. And they can also give assurances like they have in the press that the privacy regulations on companies like Comcast are going to be similar to the privacy regulations on edge providers who create third-party set-top boxes. But that's all just assurances. And that's only as good as, you know, the political realities of the day or whatever they feel like it will benefit them. One of the problems is that the FCC just kind of has a lot of discretion here to interpret the market the way it wants. They can look at the market and say it's not competitive. I can look at the market and say it's very competitive because I consider Chromecast to be a competitor to a cable box when they don't. And they can just draw conclusions and then make rules based on those conclusions, whether or not they've really done a lot of economic analysis to determine whether those conclusions have merit. I mean, it really just depends on the way you look at things.
I think that's a really important point because a lot of the... So to my mind, the problem with this NPRM is that the proposed solution is really sort of antiquated. They think that giving people a new slash better way to interact with the same merchandise is going to create a massive shift when the market that they're talking about are people who already have access to this thing that they're giving a new way to access. So that doesn't... It doesn't make a lot of sense. And in modernity, there are plenty of ways to access information. You, Evan, have listed a number of ways that people have gone over the top of their cable boxes to gain access to the content that they want. And that's what drives diversity in the industry. That's what drives market competition, consumer desire. The biggest fault in this NPRM, from my perspective, is that it doesn't take into account any of the positives that the industry has produced. Any of the individual consumer apps, which have been really very successful. It's not considering how broad the market really is and is looking at the narrowness of a cable box and saying that that's the whole picture, and it's really not.
Yeah, the future of TV is going to be apps. I mean, consumers are already getting a lot of their content through apps, and even if you have a cable subscription, you have the option. A lot of these cable companies like Comcast and Verizon have an app, so if you have a cable box in one room of your house, that costs you $15 to $20 a month, but then you could have a Chromecast or something like that in every other room of your house, which is a one-time fee. You don't have to rent it, using the Xfinity app or the Fios app to consume video. So there are multiple options. There are many ways to get around paying $15 to $20 a month. And let's not diminish just how important that $19 billion a year could be to those companies. I mean, if that's how they're making their money, because paying for the rights to show things like HBO is so expensive, or paying for the rights to show things like ESPN is so expensive, maybe that's how they're making money on selling video. And these companies will say, you start, if the third party set-top boxes become really successful and start stripping away that revenue from these companies, you could see a situation where either they invest less in broadband or they charge more for broadband. I mean, if there's going to be costs borne by the companies, whether it's the technical aspect of rejiggering their equipment to make it work with a third party, or, I mean, that cost could easily be passed down to a consumer. Why wouldn't it be?
So a couple of points. First, I want to be really clear, because it was made really clear to me that this will not necessarily implicate more hardware for consumers. It could potentially, if that's how cable companies choose to implement, but according to the FCC, there is nothing in this proposal which would require increased hardware on the consumer side.
Right, but there's still the company's going to have to do something, yes, to make their content interoperable with a third party. I mean, that's not something that exists now, and they are going to have to do something.
Yes, the interoperability of content is a big issue, because that's where all of the like copyright protections, privacy issues, if we're going to allow these third party intermediaries access to protected content, we need to make sure that they have those same protections.
Yeah, and the FCC is claiming that because of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which we've talked about on this program, that there is a provision in there about making sure that the set-top box market is competitive. They're claiming that authority. The FCC has done this before. In 2010, there was a similar proposal, which went nowhere. They had a proposal called Cable Card, where, correct me if I'm wrong, it involved getting rid of the set-top boxes and just having cards that you would still get from the cable company, but it would be a different way of getting video. That didn't really take off. So it's not like this is some new issue. And it's kind of funny to me to see 20 years after the passage of the Telecommunications Act that all of a sudden this is such an urgent thing. So it begs the question, what's the motivation here? Is it really to make a market competitive that they find uncompetitive, or is it politics? And we've seen at the FCC, politics is certainly a part of what they do. Unfortunately, it's supposed to be an independent regulatory body, but it's not immune to politics. I have to point out that the companies who opposed Title II, the net neutrality regulations, they're on the short end of this stick, because they're the ones charging $15 to $20 a month, and they're the ones who have something to lose here. A lot of the companies who supported Title II reclassification of broadband and what the FCC refers to as net neutrality regulation, they're the ones who are going to be making these third-party set-top boxes. So there's always the issue of picking winners and losers in the marketplace. And, you know, the FCC wouldn't admit it, but it seems like politics are here, and there's other motivations. I mean, do you feel the same way, having read and looked so closely at the order?
So the politics of it are complicated, as politics always are, but the actual black letter SEC NPRM, I don't think represents the best solution. So why would you adopt a solution that is not the best solution if there aren't political reasons, is sort of my
So if you were position. In the, let's say, Mariah, tomorrow you're FCC chairman and you have a regulatory blank check to do whatever you want, you have a different approach here, or would you just do nothing? I mean, what
I would absolutely have a different approach. I would absolutely have a different approach, and for two reasons. The first reason is that this approach seems rather antiquated, and it seems to get at a problem, which is sort of dissipating the inability of people to get different kinds of programming from different sources is not really the problem. If I thought I had a congressional mandate to do something to open up the market, I would go back to the DSTAC report and look at their other proposed suggestion, because those are qualified people in the industry who have made two suggestions, one of which was more modern, and the other of which we see in this NPRM.
Yeah, there was an option to just, like Tim Cook said, the future, I think it was Tim Cook, said the future of TV is apps. We're all going to be getting our TV from apps. This idea that we're going to have a cable box is dying out. So one of the DStack recommendations was just an app-based approach to figure out a way that from now on, you can still get your television from Verizon, but you're not going to have a box. It's just going to be an app. And as we move towards smart TVs and things like that, it's going to become easier and easier. And then no one's going to be renting set-top boxes for $15 to $20 a month. So maybe they'll pay in another way. But that at least that regime of having to have multiple boxes in every room of your house, that's going to go away. And they could have focused on that aspect of the DStack report, but instead they're focusing on the set-top box proposal, which, as I mentioned, this is nothing new and it's kind of stale. So really, should we be prolonging the life of the cable box, or should we just be watching as it goes away on its own as market forces play out?
I would tend to agree. And I don't know that the cable box, I mean, we talked about the $19.5 billion incentive for the cable box to continue to exist. Yes. But human ingenuity, I believe, is much larger than the cable box. And to the extent that cable tries to force us to consume in that way, the market and individual ingenuity is more than capable of coming up with ways around that.
Yeah, I see they see the writing on the wall. I don't think they're going to try to artificially keep this alive any longer than it needs to be. But that's it for today's show. My guest has been Mariah Mensa, a recent graduate of Howard University School of Law. Mariah, thanks for joining the show again.
Happy to be here.
And in terms of timing for this order, they haven't voted on it yet. So, you know, we're just going to be looking out. And the FCC says it wants new rules on the books by the end of the year. But for now, nothing's really happening with this. But we'll keep you up to date on the podcast, and we'll certainly be tracking it. Follow us on Twitter at TechFreedom or on Facebook.com/TechFreedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will help us and it will help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.